Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Porto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Porto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Porto, and you're listening to Mushing Radio on KVRF in Palmer, Alaska. And on the line, we have our Iditarod coverage co-host. He is back on Mushing Radio, calling in from the sunny climes of Southern California, Alex Stein. Alex, how's it going this evening?
It's going great, Robert. I'm thrilled to be back on Radio Free Palmer with you.
You know, it's only been 2-3 weeks now, but I'm glad you're back. What is going on down there in California?
Well, you know, we had what passes for weather here because it rained a few days ago. And I know that doesn't count for much compared to all of the weather that you guys have had this winter and the breakup that's going on that seems to be accelerating and that's happening up there the past few days. But it's been, you know, it's been kind of nice and sunny down here. I've noticed there are a lot of dogs that seem that, like they would be very good sled dogs that I've noticed here in the past few days. A lot of huskies, a lot of Alaskan huskies, and just some dogs that I think should be hooked up to a sled.
Well, the tentacles are reaching out even further down from Alaska than we think. You know, I have a lot of mushing friends down all over throughout the United States, and they're, you know, they listen to our show and follow us on Facebook and whatnot. So mushing is becoming a national phenomenon, at least on our radio show. Our numbers are growing like crazy, and I'm glad you're a part of it with us, and I'm glad that we could be on tonight and talk about it. We're supposed to have our continuing coverage of our Iditarod mushers, but we're having some technical difficulties with our guest calling in, so we'll have her on next week if she's unable to call in today. But without further ado, let's talk, Alex. What is going on in the mushing world? I know you had some interesting tweets this past weekend, in particular about somebody we talked a lot about during the Iditarod, the mushing mortician Scott Jansen. What did he do this week?
Oh, okay. So the Iditarod. And I guess by the Iditarod, I mean the Iditarod Trail Committee, does a lot of things during the race and after the race and all year round to raise money to put on the race. And one of the things they do is they have a big raffle that's held a couple weeks after the race. And I'm not sure exactly how expensive the tickets are, but they are not cheap. I believe they're somewhere on the order of $40 or $50. They sell a whole bunch of these raffle tickets, and there's some great prizes, including, I believe, 4 trucks, which are just like the trucks that the winner of the Iditarod gets. And Scott Jansen bought a raffle ticket and won one of the trucks.
That is pretty cool. You know, he didn't win the Iditarod, but he gave his heart out on the trail. You know, we talked about the saving of his dog's life on the trail, as well as giving money to one of the Checkpoint Awards. And what a better ambassador for this year's Iditarod than Scott Jansen. And, you know, I guess it's one of those pay-it-forward things. He goes out and buys a, like you said, $40, $50, $60 ticket, and he wins one of those trucks anyway.
Yeah, and it's really, I think, kind of a wonderful story because, as we talked about during the race, Scott Jansen really did a lot to celebrate what I think of and what a lot of people think of is the true spirit of the Iditarod. And when he saw that the hotel that had sponsored the First of the Yukon prize had pulled out, he very generously donated $3,000 so there would be a prize for the first person who got there. And then, of course, at the finisher's banquet, he presented that prize in a specially built tiny coffin. They had the bills stacked up in the coffin.
That is cool. And I know we talked about that in the finishing banquet coverage that we did. We talked about that unique way to present that that award. Who was it that won that award? Was that Jim Lanier? Or no, I'm sorry, that was Mitch Seavey.
No, Martin Boozer.
Martin Boozer. I'm sorry. It's been 3 or 4 weeks after the Iditarod, and I'm losing my mind here.
I understand. I sometimes have, you know, razor-sharp recall of everything for about 48 hours, and then it goes.
So what else is going on in the Iditarod or mushing circles? I know you kind of have your finger on the pulse of it, at least on a Twitter community side. Any other news and notes you can report for us?
You know, that's really the big news is that they had the raffle. I believe there were a couple of short distance races that happened in the past couple weeks, but I don't, off the top of my head, know what the results of those were.
I know the Kobuk 440 is taking place. I don't know if it's this weekend. Actually, it's the following weekend. It's a pretty big deal in the villages of Alaska, 440 miles. So that's nothing to sneeze at in terms of mid-distance races, 440 miles in the interior and on the coast there in the Kobuk area is quite a race, especially for a late season, early spring type dog sledding race.
Yeah, and I would imagine that with a race like that, with the weather getting warmer, that it might present a whole different set of challenges in terms of the trail being a little bit, I don't know, a little bit rougher, and the certainly the temperature not being ideal for the dogs.
Right. And I'm not sure of what the temperature is out that way at this time, especially sometime later next week, of course, next weekend. We're reaching mid-40s here in the Matsu Valley, and we're definitely in the middle of breakup, what we call our big snow melt. Our family and I have been digging out kennels for the past 3-4 weeks now, and we're definitely in our hip-wading boots and ready for spring.
Yeah, and this is the time of year when the when mushers start getting their quads out so that they can do a little bit of dry land training. Although I guess your land isn't quite dry yet.
Oh no, we still have at least 3 feet on the ground up in Willow. I'm here in Palmer looking out the window right now. Huge mud puddles, not a whole lot of snow left, but like you said, it's time of that transition from the sleds and all the hubbub of our mushing season now down to a little bit of rest. Many mushers take vacations at this time. I know Iditarod veteran and Yukon Quest champion this year is heading to Hawaii next week for his little R&R. A lot of the mushers will start up their school talks and their speaking tours, talking to people all over the country in the off season about mushing and about this way of life that we live up here. You know, so a musher's life definitely doesn't revolve around training and running dogs all the time. We have to do a lot of things in the off season that prepares us to be able to run dogs in the wintertime.
You know, one thing that I was wondering, which maybe you can clear up for me and the people listening as well, when you have a kennel and you're breeding your own dogs, is there a set time when you try to breed the dogs, or does it just depend on when they go into heat? And how often do dogs go into heat? I'm sorry if this is a dumb question.
No, that's a great question. Dogs typically go into heat twice a year on a six-month cycle or so, depending on if those dogs have been bred, of course, in the previous heat. A dog's gestation or pregnancy is about 2 months. Then, of course, they're incapacitated in terms of breeding at that time. But a lot of premier Iditarod kennels or long-distance kennels, mushing kennels, try to work around those breeding cycles for their dogs. As we know, this year with Lance Mackey's dog, who was bred accidentally, I assume, on the Iditarod Trail at one of the checkpoints, you never know when the dog is going to go into heat, and many times they go into heat when other dogs are into heat. We call it throwing them into heat. So that is an occasion as well. But, of course, a lot of kennels have breeding females that do not run. They may be retired or are not on the A-team at that time, so they're used strictly for breeding during that time.
And there's no way really to control when the dog's going to heat. It's just when it's a natural thing, and there's I would imagine limited effect that humans can have on their schedule.
Right, and I don't know if I'm 100% right on here, but I know that there are some medications or drugs out there to prevent that. But I believe most of those are banned substances, at least on the Iditarod. I don't think that they can be used on their dogs. But in particular, I work pretty closely with a premier Siberian Husky breeder. His line goes way back to the start of the Siberian Husky, at least in Alaska. And the way he does it, he does not breed any of his females until after they're done racing, whether they be 6, 7, 8 years old, because he wants to make sure that those dogs are proven sled dogs before he breeds them. He doesn't want to breed them at 1, 2, or 3 and then produce sled dogs without a desired result.
Is that the way it usually works, or do people usually breed dogs a little bit earlier than that?
Most of them are bred earlier. Of course, a lot of folks will breed dogs with other dogs. I know a lot of folks talk about, I'm going to breed this dog with, John Baker's dog or Ken Anderson's dog or Lance Mackey's dog. And then when one comes into heat, they will take that dog or have the stud dog come down to their kennel and a planned breeding will take place. But as you know, when you have 50 or 60 dogs in the kennel, there are times for accidental breedings.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it is definitely the time for puppy love, I guess we could call it, in the kennels. So yes, that's a great question, Alex, because that does occur in the summertime. But you know who would be a great person to talk about that, and we hope to have him on in a couple of weeks, is Martin Booser. We've reached out to him in terms of scheduling him on a future show. I think he can answer those questions a heck of a lot better than I can, and we're looking forward to having him on the show pretty soon.
Excellent. Yeah, that should be a fantastic interview, too.
So last week, Alex, I know you listened to our show. We interviewed Iditarod musher and former runway model Zoya Deneur. What do you think about that interview?
I thought it was actually a fantastic interview. Zoya is incredibly well-spoken, and I think for a lot of guys, we tend to get a little bit goofy because she's just so beautiful as a former runway model. But she's incredibly smart, very well-spoken, and someone who is completely and totally dedicated to her dogs and to, furthering her goals for rescue and rehabilitation and training dogs and making sure that the dogs, that the right dogs go to the right people. And the her plans for the facility that she's going to open in the Mathew Valley just sound absolutely fantastic.
And you can hear that full interview, 30 minutes with Zoya Deneur, on our website on mushingradio.com. And I think you can find a link on our Facebook page, Dog Works Radio. You know, Alex, during our Iditarod coverage, we gave away several copies of your film, Mush the Movie. I know I sent over a list to you of the daily winners. Have you got a chance to get those out yet? And if you have, can you tell us a little bit about our contest?
Those, I have them all set. They're going out tomorrow morning.
Very cool.
We basically had a contest where we gave a copy of an advanced copy of Mush the Movie to fans who liked our Facebook page, Dog Works Radio on Facebook, and it was a very popular thing. I apologize to people who are listening for not having gotten the tapes out before now, but they're all set. They're sitting at my doorstep, and they'll go out tomorrow morning.
And, you know, it was a worldwide listenership. I think one of the winners was in the Netherlands or Denmark or somewhere.
Exactly. There was someone from the Netherlands, and I don't recall exactly where they were, but there were people from all over. I think there might have been also someone from Canada, although I'm not positive that that's true.
Well, you know, we are the only mushing radio show in the country, at least in North America, that hosts a weekly mushing show every week on FM radio and, as far as I know, on a weekly podcast as well. Of course, a lot of folks will do their own kennel podcasts and things like that, but we are a full-time mushing radio show right here in the Mathew Valley.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's, you know, there's a lot of coverage during the Iditarod itself, and there are some great broadcasts and some great podcasts for the Iditarod. But one of the things that makes this show special is that it continues all year long, because mushers and people who run dogs and the mushing lifestyle is a lot more than just the Iditarod.
That's exactly right. And I spoke with the Iditarod Communications Director, who is also my kennel partner, Erin McLarnon, and she and I have been working over the last few weeks in scheduling all of the mushers between the end of the Iditarod and the beginning of next Iditarod. We hope to have everybody on this show every week, and we've spoke to Zoya, we spoke to Anna Barrington. I have an interview with Dallas Seavey that is loaded up and ready to go. I think that will air, if not next week, it'll air sometime this week on mushingradio.com. And we have Ken Anderson on the 18th, and Anjanette Steer is next week, next Wednesday's show here on Mushing Radio, and we're doing our best to have you on, Alex, every week as a co-host here on Mushing Radio, if we can work out all of the technical kinks. I know when we're dealing with internet and streaming and the whole nine yards, Skype and landlines and radio doesn't always go hand in hand.
Exactly, and I've threatened to have like a couple of tin cans and a really, really long piece of string, but we haven't gotten that to work yet either.
That is true. That is true. So it is the off season. We've talked about that in depth here the last few minutes. Have you reached out and connected with anybody in terms of your Twitter contacts, your Facebook contacts, of people that are asking any questions, you know, after the Iditarod of things that are happening, at least in the mushing world? You know, a lot of people like football. When the Super Bowl is over, they put away their football jerseys until, you know, next August, next September, and they don't think about it anymore. Have you had any questions or comments on social media that you can direct to us?
Well, it's died down quite a bit, but someone did ask me in the past couple days what happens to sled dogs when they retire. And I believe we've talked about this during the race a little bit, but maybe we could go into that a little bit more. And I think, honestly, it just depends on the kennel. A lot of mushers will keep retired sled dogs, and they'll sort of turn into house dogs. Some people adopt out their retired sled dogs. Some sled dogs, I believe, are, as we talked about earlier, go into the breeding side of it. But from your perspective, what really happens with some of the sled dogs that you've worked with or that you've known?
You know, that's another great question, Alex. And we talked about that when we talked a few minutes ago about Zoya Denur and what she does with some of her retired and or incorrigible sled dogs that she runs across in her business dealings at her kennel. She places those guys and she trains them up to make sure that they are acceptable house dogs or sled dogs, and then places them with other kennels, other homes, recreational type kennels and that. Several people do what you said. They retire them out, and if they go on to other homes, whether it be that rec team or, you know, that musher that is looking for, you know, that not so high caliber Iditarod type dog, that sprint dog, you know, the dog that will fit well into their team that may not fit in the other musher's team as well. I've always been one that keeps all of my dogs until they pass away, and I know that there are several kennels going in that direction where they keep the dogs from birth until death, and they're, you know, they raise them up, they run with them, they train with them, then they retire and they stay in the kennel and get run on the old guys team, as we call them, you know, after their retirement, and they live the, you know, the typical retired lifestyle. They get to kick back and you know, be dogs. They aren't under that daily stress of training and racing anymore. Then, of course, when the time comes, they pass on from various things, whether it be illness or old age or cancer or whatnot. But I think that's more of the prevailing way of thinking these days, is so many people do find that they are keeping their dogs longer, and if they don't keep them, that they pass them on to somebody that, you know, that can provide them with an acceptable way of life.
Yeah, And I've met a couple of retired sled dogs that people have as pets, as house dogs now, and they are just wonderful, affectionate, really just terrific dogs in terms of looking at it just from a pet standpoint after their, if you will, after their working life is over.
Yeah, and there is one word of caution there. Not all sled dogs can be excellent house dogs. You guys have to remember that for most of these dogs' lives, they've lived outside. They've been asked to work a very rigorous lifestyle, you know, running hundreds of miles a year. So they don't necessarily always make that lovable house dog that will sleep in your bed with you and cuddle up with you when you're watching Monday Night Football. These guys are very, very high-tuned, specially bred athletes. So you have to be a little bit cautious when you go to adopt a dog and then expect him to be like your typical family dog, like a lab or a golden retriever or something like that. And that's a great point to bring up, Alex. Just this past weekend, I went down and met with a client at my dog training business here in Anchorage, and he had adopted two sled dogs, retired. And, of course, he's having some pretty major behavioral issues. Of course, he lives in an apartment in downtown Anchorage, and he works the typical Alaskan lifestyle from 6 o'clock in the morning till 9 or 10 o'clock at night. And his dogs are very unruly. So, of course, we're offering him some obedience training. So that's another example of how these dogs need that exercise, even in retirement age.
Yeah, and I would think that even if they weren't sled dogs, being cooped up in an apartment isn't really ideal.
Yes, exactly.
Dogs are animals that need a lot of exercise generally, even house dogs.
Well, they're not like your cat. I know you've talked a lot about your cat, at least on our Iditarod coverage, as well as your Facebook page and whatnot. What is the deal with your cat? I know you told us during the Iditarod coverage on how he or she got his name. Tell us a little story about him or her.
Okay. Our cat is named Sitka P. Coldfoot, and he's named after two places in Alaska, after Sitka, which was the Russian capital, and after Coldfoot, Alaska, which is a small town up on the Hall Road that used to be owned by Rick Mackey back, I believe, in the 80s. And my wife and I were actually married at the bar in Coldfoot, Alaska, by the bartender. And it is above the Arctic Circle, and it's a wonderful place. And anyone who is going up on the Dalton Highway, the Hall Road, and I'm sure there are reasons to do that, besides what we did, which was just, we basically went, the first time we went to Alaska, we drove every place that is on the road system, pretty much. And so we were married there. And when we got this cat, who is very, very dog-like, we decided to name him after both of these places in Alaska. And as for the P, no one quite knows what the P stands for.
Hold on a second. I've got to pick on you here a little bit, Alex. We're priding ourselves here on Mushing Radio, not always talking about the sport of mushing and training and racing and races, but about the lifestyle of Alaskans and a lifestyle of a musher. Here you are, your wife and yourself, California folks. And you come up to Alaska, to Coldfoot, Alaska, and Coldfoot has been made pretty much famous now on Ice Road Truckers. It's very prevalent on that show where they're driving up and down that highway. They often go out that way. But you came to Alaska and were married in Coldfoot. What in the world for?
Well, I'm not sure how to answer that question. In Alaska, as you and other people may or may not know, any adult resident of the state can perform marriages. So when we were going up to Alaska, we decided that if we were going to get married, first we decided we were going to get married. And then we decided if we're going to get married, let's do it in an unusual way. And we thought about various things that would qualify for that. And we decided that getting married above the Arctic Circle would certainly be something that nobody nobody that we knew had ever done.
Huh.
So we called the people who owned the basically the town, although to call it a town is a little bit of an exaggeration. It's a motel and a restaurant and a bar and a gas station.
Hmm.
And I believe that in the winter, I believe there's like 10 or 12 people who live there. It gets a little bit more crowded during the summer. But so we knew we were going up there, and we called the people who owned the town, who owned the thing, and we said, we're coming up there, and we heard that any adult resident of the state can perform marriages. And so they agreed that they would perform this wedding.
That's an awesome story, Alex. I'm glad we had you on tonight. We only have about a minute left. This show went very quickly. But, you know, I have to josh you a little bit. We've talked about this, and if we could comment very quickly on this. Just today it was announced that that GCI, the premier cell phone provider up here, is going to be offering the iPhone on April 20th. And I am a huge iPhone addict, and I know you're clawing at a reason to get that Alaska cell phone. How about getting that iPhone from GCI with that 907 number here real quickly?
I'm all in favor of that, and I think that as part of their outreach to the mushing community, they should perhaps give me an iPhone.
We'll see if we can make that possible. I'm sure that some folks that may be sponsored by GCI, some of those big-time Iditarod mushers, we can get them on our speed dial and give them a call for you. But, Alex, we're about out of time. It's been a pleasure talking. I know we'll have you back on real soon. Anything you want to say in closing in about 15 seconds?
As usual, keep pursuing your dreams. In and out of mushing, in and out of dog sports, and that's basically it.
There you go. Alex Stein, the writer and director of Mush the Movie, mushthemovie.com. Check it out. This is Robert Forto on behalf of Mushing Radio. We'll talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.